You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to your favorite day of the week. This is Locked On NBA. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Adam. Adam, you have a week off. You're fully refreshed. You feel like you're ready to go, right? You don't feel like you put in 40 minutes in a meaningless game in New Orleans.
You know, last year when LeBron took that two-week sabbatical and came back better than ever, it's going to be just like that for me here on this show. I went down to Miami for some treatments.
Took a random trip to Miami where no shady doctors exist whatsoever.
I was on the VersaClimber. That's all. Just work it out.
Today's show, we are going to talk first about Lakers-Pelicans. I cover the Lakers, so I was especially frustrated, and it's always fun watching Anthony Davis play basketball and watching Lonzo Ball fire up, miss three after miss three after miss three. And then we are going to talk about the best matchups that we want featured in the upcoming playoffs. And then to finally wrap up the show, this whole Kawhi Leonard saga, we covered it last time Adam and I were on the show together. We're going to update the situation, some somewhat conflicting reports, especially between Danny Green and Adrian Wojnarowski. But I have a larger point to make about this DPE, this designated player extension, and what it's kind of done to the league. So let's go ahead and get into it. As always, you can follow the show anywhere you find podcasts all over the place, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, all of those good places. Adam covers the Nuggets for Denver Stiffs and hosts Locked On Nuggets. I cover the Lakers for Locked On Lakers and at Lakers Outsiders. Adam, the Lakers lose to the New Orleans Pelicans 125-128. I would argue, and I argued on my show, that it was one of the dumbest endings that a decent, because I don't consider the Lakers good. I think they're a little better than bad. But that I've really seen a decent NBA team play down the stretch. Isaiah Thomas was featured heavily for some reason. Anthony Davis did his thing. Rajon Rondo played maybe the best game he'll play all year. But what were some of your takeaways from what you saw of Lakers Pellies?
Well, I wonder if one of the reasons they were outscored 31-17 in the fourth quarter was because they played three guys over 40 minutes. And this is the weirdest thing for me. If I'm a Laker fan and I'm watching these games, is it's fun to win. It's great to push these guys, but 44 minutes on the bodies of these young guys. I know they're young, but just what is the point? And it's actually happened a lot over the last couple months with Luke Walton electing to play these guys in the high 30s, low 40s minutes. And to me, it was a fun game, you know, competitive against a very, very good New Orleans team. The Lakers have looked great for a couple months now. Or several weeks now, But what is the point of playing Lonzo Ball, Caldwell Pope, and Kyle Kuzma 43-plus minutes? That just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, Tibbs thinks that Luke needs to calm down with the minutes here a little bit.
Tibbs calls, huh? He said, chill, man. Yeah. You're going to hurt these guys.
But I think, so it really all boils down to having Tyler Ennis on your bench, having Luol Deng on your roster, and basically, like, you have guys in the Lakers front court that are putting in all these crazy minutes, and Luol Deng still can't be called. Channing Frye just came back, but you know, I don't think they felt comfortable putting him right back into these minutes. And Thomas Bryant, just frankly, I don't think they consider ready to play NBA minutes. And you know, they have Ingram hurt, Josh Hart is hurt. So really, what it comes down to is roster and organizational depth. And this is where having Tyler Ennis on your roster really kind of shows its rears its head, because it'd be nice to have a point guard to spell Lonzo Ball or to spell even Isaiah Thomas when they're kind of struggling, as they did tonight. I wanted to also focus on the Pelicans because Anthony Davis. So we were talking about this before we went live, but we were marveling at how few shooters that he has around him, and you would think that a big would need as much shooting as he can possibly get. And we somehow uttered the phrase a pedestrian 33-9.
Very, very off night for him.
It's
33-9, but you're forgetting the three steals and two blocks, which again, they're also pedestrian at this point.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. Now, again, it helps that, you know, Rajon Rondo hit a three, which is in and of itself a momentous occasion. And
it was a big one, too.
It was. It was a huge one. It was a 29-footer, and then it was followed up by another Lonzo Ball brick from 27 feet. Step-back three-pointer. Great shot selection. Big bricker brand. But Jrue Holiday also played really well. But it says something that Davis is surrounded by not quite the best fits, but just seems to make it work.
I think this is true of basketball. One of the like sad truths I think about the history of basketball is how many great players have gone underappreciated because of maybe just some of the fit and either the coaching fit, the coach player dynamic, or just not having a right roster around him. And Anthony Davis is a guy who I don't think we've ever seen. Not that we never seen a fully optimized version of him. I just don't know that we've ever gotten more than like 80%. And the thing I wanted to talk about was the Pelicans added Chris Finch this offseason as an assistant coach. And he was one of the architects of the Denver Nuggets offense last season as an assistant on Michael Malone's staff and helped really foster and create this Jokic ball experience that was the number one offense for Denver kind of through a point center. And similar things, you look at DeMarcus Cousins, and he was just an incredible player when he was the point center, more or less, of this New Orleans team. And now that he's down and you add in Mirotić, you got a little bit more shooting out there. You add even Ian Clark, who I know is like an under-the-radar, not necessarily great NBA player, but just another guy that can shoot. And now you've got all this room for Anthony Davis to operate. And I just think, for one, I think Chris Finch is a tremendous offensive mind, but I also think that we're finally seeing what Anthony Davis looks like when he just has a little bit of an optimized lineup and situation around him.
Yeah, I want to see more of that. And then, you know, I just want to see the best players in the NBA optimized. I want Giannis optimized. I want Anthony Davis optimized. I want to see these guys in the absolute best situation that they can possibly be. We'll wrap up this first segment on funniest things that we saw from across the NBA, and it was from this very game. Lonzo Ball goes from the wing. He has a wide open path to the basket. He cups the ball in his right hand. He puts it in two hands, goes up to dunk it, and Anthony Davis happened to be there. And I tweeted out that Lonzo Ball just challenged Anthony Davis at the rim, and it went exactly as you're picturing it. And the best part about this is the first response to this, and I don't have the at off the top of my head, but the first response to this was, "Oh crap, Lonzo died." and Harrison and I just happened to be watching the game together, and we laughed about it for a good 5 minutes or so. What was the funniest thing you saw from across the lake?
Well, it was brave of Lonzo. You know, I'm a Lonzo fan. It was brave of him to go in and challenge Anthony Davis. But I wasn't close. It really was kind of like, have you seen Rushmore when Bill Murray swats the like 6-year-olds playing on the hoop? That's what it reminded me of. My funny, and it's weird, mine involves Kevin Hart, and I know it's weird to use Kevin Hart and funny in the same sentence, but I saw today that he had been recruiting LeBron to go to the Philadelphia 76ers. And my thought was, is that like the worst ambassador for recruitment that you could send out is Kevin Hart? Like, if Kevin Hart showed up at my doorstep to recruit me for anything, I'd immediately never buy that product.
Yeah. I thought when you were saying, I mean, other than Kevin Hart, the worst recruiting way that you could go with a similarly short guard would be the Lakers trotting out Isaiah Thomas for their free agency marketing. We're going to take a quick we're going to take a quick second here, and on the other side of it, we're going to bring up and mention and try to rank our favorite potential playoff matchups. All right, so I had trouble ranking the Eastern Conference, so I'll let you start there. What are some of your favorite Eastern Conference matchups that you'd like to see in the first round of the playoffs?
I think the reason you had a hard time with that is the Eastern Conference just doesn't have as many compelling teams that you really feel have a shot at some of the top teams, at least in my opinion. But if I do look, first of all, Cleveland falling down, which is they're at 42 wins, 39 losses. Washington, who's in the sixth seed, is at 31. So they're still close enough with all those teams that Cleveland could have a road game in the first round. I don't see it happening. But mine, I went with was Boston and Washington. And the reason I think that one is interesting, one, Washington is 2-1 against Boston this year. But I just think a Kyrie John Wall matchup. I know both guys at the moment, maybe
currently down.
So maybe this would be a terrible matchup. But if healthy, I just like to see a point guard duel like that. And both guys are so different; they get the job done in different ways. But I think it would make for an entertaining one.
I mean, it looks like it's not going to happen now because Philly has kind of vaulted itself, up to the four spot in the playoffs. But I was
going to be a three seed.
I was really hoping for a Philly-Cavs first-round series. That's what I was legitimately really hoping for.
Who would you take?
I would still go Cleveland because LeBron and experience and all of those cliches. But, if I was a Philly fan, all that I would hope for there is that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid put on a good enough show that LeBron thinks long and hard this offseason. That's all that you can hope for.
It'd just be such a fascinating series because obviously LeBron is the best player in that series. But Joel Embiid, I'm just so excited for playoff Embiid. I'm really curious. He's so good. And just seeing what he looks like, first of all, he's going to get 3 days rest between every game, which is going to be great.
On Twitter or in games?
Both, actually. and you know what? You know, LeBron does his, he logs off for the playoffs of social media. But I could see Joel like pulling him back in. It's easy to talk trash when one party is, unable to respond, so.
I just picture it like Jimmy Kimmel has Guillermo on his show.
Yeah.
And, like, every All-Star break or every, All-Star or big NBA moment, he tries to get Guillermo to get a one-on-one with LeBron. And so, like, you always see the clip of Guillermo going, LeBron, 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 LeBron. And, like, I could just see Embiid, just all 200 and whatever characters utilized towards getting just all straight King James ats. I could see that happening. Let's head over to the West. What would be your favorite playoff matchup that you could possibly get?
I got a couple here. Two of them that involve Houston. I think Houston-Utah would be an interesting series. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think Houston wins the first-round series no matter who they play. So when I say interesting, it's not that I think somebody's going to beat them, but Utah just presents an interesting challenge. Such a defensive-minded team with some like big-time young players. I also think Utah's playing with house money, which always helps in these types of series. And the other one that I put out here was Houston-San Antonio, which – only because of the history of San Antonio and James Harden and D'Antoni and Popovich,
yep.
I think is interesting. Even though on paper, I can't pick a reason why San Antonio would even hang with Houston, but except for the history.
I mean, it's like I said in the last time that we talked about these two organizations, that if you go to Greg Popovich's office, there's a deed to Mike D'Antoni in the playoffs. Like he has it mounted very predominantly. I would like to see Golden State and Utah square off in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And it's because I think Utah's length, and now Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors both have to be healthy for this. But I think Utah's length, their lineup recently, where I think it's Rubio, Jay Crowder, Favors, Gobert, and I think it's Ingles, has been just demolishing.
Of course it's Jingles.
I think that lineup there, if they can keep up the stuff that they've been doing defensively, I think that, because you aren't going to outscore Golden State, but if they could put the clamps down and really make Golden State think about it and work for it, then that's what I really want to watch. And I agree with you that between Houston and Golden State, I don't think there's an upset in the first round that we could really see, but I just want to see those teams really struggle.
Well, the thing about it is Golden State really limping into the playoffs here. And some of the quotes we saw about Steph Curry, it really makes you think he's not going to be not only 100%, because I know nobody's 100% at this point of the season, but maybe less than they even lead on about. I feel less confident than ever in Golden State reaching the finals this year. And I know that's crazy to say. I still think they're, when healthy and everything, they have everything it takes to dominate this playoffs. But there's a couple signs of, Maybe this team is just not at full strength and not even mentally, emotionally, spiritually, everything else at their best right now.
Yeah, it's just they're fighting history at that point. These long 4 or 5 year playoff runs that they've been on, you kind of have to strike while the iron's hot in those kind of situations. And fortunately, in my case, being somebody who has paid attention to the Lakers, they won three straight titles in those situations, but you kind of have to just win.
Are you getting a little 2004 Pistons vibe from this Toronto team that nobody's talking about, and they're a little bit like, this is the best version of them that they've ever had?
I just can't trust. Like, it's hard for me to trust the Raptors. Like, yes, they have invigorated their bench, and yes, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, especially DeRozan, has really evolved as a player, but man, it's still Toronto. It's still the key pieces.
It's just, I remember that, and I know in hindsight, which shouldn't have been the narrative, but I just remember that 2004 Pistons series being like the epilogue to the Lakers. Like, okay, they're back. Now they got it. And I could see a Houston Golden State game going six or seven games and being a bloodbath and great basketball, and then being like, okay, they won. Now they just got to take care of Toronto. And Toronto's surprising everybody. Nobody's talking about it, so I guess maybe we shouldn't jinx it. But I do see this as the perfect spot for Toronto, where all eyes are elsewhere, and they might actually have a pretty decent road to get there.
Yeah, they just have to take care of business. All right, we're going to take a quick second here, and on the other side of it, we're going to talk about Kawhi Leonard. This really weird San Antonio Spurs saga that seems to just keep coming up, and also this DPE that is, in my opinion, kind of ravaging the NBA. So, last time we spoke, you and I, we went through what we tried to know, what we might know, what some people are reporting, and then the conflicting reports. We can quickly update it. Manu had a really weird quote, right, about how the media, quote-unquote, tricked him into thinking that Kawhi was coming back and that they didn't want to fall for that trick again. And then now you have this players-only meeting and Danny Green refuting the players-only meeting. Or it's this whole thing, I think it's impossible to try to take a hard-line stance on what's going on in San Antonio. But I do think what's more interesting to me is this designated player extension that has really kind of done the opposite of what it was intended to do. Do you want to give thoughts on the Kawhi thing first and then build into this? Or do you want to just jump right into the DPE stuff?
I think with the Kawhi stuff, I do kind of take, the Spurs players who have come to the defense and said, look, it was a players only meeting, but it wasn't like we weren't confronting him. It was more about just like, you know, trying to clear the air and say, hey, we'd love to have you back. Can you come back? And we're here for you, whatever. So I do think I sympathize and empathize with players in these types of moments, because I know how hard it is to be completely clear of thought when a microphone's in front of you and like this. So I tend to think they probably just had a very friendly meeting that wasn't at all contentious in any way.
Yeah, I think you have to give the Spurs the benefit of the doubt until you don't. Right. And my only thought when I see all this stuff come out is this is usually what comes out after a player gets moved. So it's kind of interesting, especially with the Spurs. This is the kind of stuff that you see. And I'm really interested to see if Kawhi does move on. I want a 30 for 30 on what's going on behind the scenes. But about this designated player, like, I'll just kind of rant and I'll let you kind of respond to it. Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeMarcus Cousins, Paul George, now Kawhi, John Wall, Giannis Antetokounmpo, LeBron, all these guys have been eligible for this extension. Giannis and LBJ, those guys are going to get it, and the team is going to feel fine about it. Chris Paul has been traded before he could actually receive it. Blake got the extension and then was traded a few months later. DeMarcus Cousins was traded before he could sign it in Sacramento. Paul George went from Indiana to OKC and then now might potentially be a Laker. And now all this weird stuff is coming up right before Kawhi is eligible for the extension. And he's saying he wants it, and the Spurs are saying that they want to give it to him and all these things. And John Wall was given his extension and then got hurt. And now you have all these questions about, are the Wizards better with a team built around Bradley Beal, right? And so like my question to you is, Is this DPE, like, is this the last step that the NBA kind of takes before they say, all right, we're just going to make this a free market. Max players are going to get what max players are going to get. This thing didn't work. This experiment didn't work. How where do they go from here?
I don't think so. I don't think this is like a last straw to a major overhaul of the CBA. I think what it is it's the the child of negotiations from people trying to do very separate things. And, you know, the superstars really run the Players Association, right? We know this. The guys like LeBron and Chris Paul have the loudest voices in the room during these things. And they want to be paid. And they want to not just be capped out at a max. They want these super maxes for the top tier players. And then, you know, the other half of it from an ownership standpoint is, well, we want an incentive to be able to keep players like this and be able to say, hey, we can offer you so much money. What you have is you have like these teams that really can shoot themselves in the foot if a deal like this goes wrong. And, and you have small markets that I think are so desperate to retain their star players that, you know, maybe they put themselves into a pickle by throwing this type of money out to an individual guy. So to me, it's not the sign of something to come. It's just the way that negotiations work when you have this framework that everybody had to work with.
My question, I guess another thing that I'm kind of wondering about and curious about is, would this extension or exception, depending on how you want to phrase it, would this have worked better with less smart front offices? Because like now you have really, really smart analytical front offices that recognize we might not be best suited. As good a player as Paul George is, as good a player as Boogie Cousins is, and you can go on down the line, a supermax really should only go to maybe 3 to 5 guys across the league. And so would this have been better suited for an era in the NBA where teams just kept those guys, you signed those guys no matter what, and it actually serves the purpose that it was initially put in place to serve, whereas now it's kind of done the opposite, where you have these really analytical and smart front offices, and they're saying to themselves, it's going to really hurt to move a Paul George or move a Boogie, but we might be better off considering the amount of the percentage of cap that they would now demand.
I don't think any organization operates that way. I mean, in addition to giving you the best chance at winning a championship, superstars also bring people in the door. And I think these mid and small markets are as desperate for that as they are anything. But I think, and this is a bit of an offshoot of the question you're kind of getting after, and we've talked about this a lot off air before. One of the things that the NBA is going to have a problem with, I think, going forward is they have marketed and placed on television through their television partners the same teams for so long, whether they're good or bad. And I just think it makes it that much harder for small market and mid-market teams to grow their fan base. And I use the Nuggets, obviously, as an example of this. They have a cable partner. Like Kroenke Sports owns a television station here in Denver. Well, we're in the era of cable cutting. And so the only way you can watch the Denver Nuggets is if you pay $200 for a cable package, which people under the age of 35 are not doing anymore, or if they're on ESPN because people have the Watch ESPN app. Well, when the Nuggets are on ESPN twice a year or four times in a decade, and some of the big market teams are on 50, 60 times a year, you know, every single year, whether they're good or bad, well, then of course your fan bases in those big markets are going to continue to grow exponentially. And of course those teams in your small markets are going to continue to diminish exponentially. And I think that as much as anything is a problem here because, yes, these teams will pay out the teeth for these all-star players, but it's all for naught if certain teams are getting such a bigger share of the marketing pie.
Yeah, the marketing pie is a big thing. And now, look, the Laker fan in me will say, well, the Lakers have kind of earned not just because if I was to say it from the Knicks standpoint, right? Like let's say you know somebody who followed the Knicks was to hop on this podcast and say, well, the Knicks just deserve it. They are part of this huge this huge market, and people tune in for the Knicks and blah 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 blah. I'd get kind of annoyed because the Knicks have just kind of tripped over themselves for the entirety of their existence. Whereas like with the Lakers, it's like, well, they have done both. They have managed a large market and have also been exciting enough for people to follow along and as such continue to get ratings. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, how do you even start to fix it? Because it's not like you can just all of a sudden say, well, the Nuggets are going to be on and screw ratings. I don't know how you start to fix it in this kind of situation.
I'm with you as well. I mean, I totally get why these TV partners put on teams like, you know, we always get a Friday night ESPN game and it's like Lakers Sacramento. It's like, okay, I'm sure we could do a better game than this. And I get why they do it because Lakers fans will tune into anything. But but at the same time,
Entourage is the best show ever.
I do think that there is a breaking point at some point where the big markets just become so big and the small markets are only there as fodder for the big markets. And I think that would be an unhealthy thing as well.
Do you think that's where we're heading then with the Supermax contract, that only the big markets can afford it because of how the teams have been marketed and the amount of money and slices of that pie that are going out?
I think the way that people consume the NBA is likely to change over the next decade anyway. And I said this when they signed the giant TV deal with ESPN. I told everybody this at the time. I said, this is a really weird deal to sign at a moment when media is changing so much. Yep. Because, you know, people are cutting cable and all mm-hmm. of these different things, that it seems weird to have this antiquated thing. I think ESPN hasn't had some of the revenues that they expected maybe throughout the course of this contract. And so I do think that things will change in the near future in ways we don't see. But I do think that'll be one of the things that I hope the league addresses going forward, is how to help these teams create a market, how to help these teams market these small market teams, because I think the league desperately needs them.
Yep. I would tend to agree, though. Again, it just, the ratings pay the bills, and that's going to be part of the evolution. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On NBA show here on this Friday edition. Adam and I host it every Friday. I am at Anthony Irwin LA. That is at Adam_Morris. You can find my stuff on Lakers Outsiders. You can find his on Denver Stiffs. You can follow our respective shows on Locked On Nuggets for Adam, Locked On Lakers for me. You can follow this show everywhere that you find podcasts. We had a really good one in yesterday's show, in which our boss David was able to sit down with Adam Silver, a really interesting conversation there that was kind of all over. It was a good, wide-ranging conversation. Plenty of stuff to look forward to over the weekend. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.